Ross Atkins, general manager of the Blue Jays, joins. Play a little Marley for you in the way in.
Oh,
you
nice.
Derek knows. Derek's got, he's got his Atkins file, so we'll run.
What's your favorite Marley song?
There's no more Marley. Oh, I like, I'm like, you know, just your basic Marley. I really like Lion and Zion. It's my favorite one.
Nice.
It's my favorite one. So we saw, I mentioned, we saw, we're seeing what we think might be an opening day lineup today. We've seen a bit of the future yesterday in Vladdy Jr. And in Bo Bichette. And, you know, it's funny. We had Mark on earlier this week, and we talked about how you figure out how a prospect advances, just in very general philosophical terms. And one of the things he mentions, he talked about your experience with Francisco Lindor and how you were kind of one of the point men and sort of, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're, you know, keeping him informed. How do you view the process of deciding how guys advance? And I'm not even necessarily talking about when they go to the majors, so that'll be part of it. But how do you decide whether or not a guy starts at Dunedin or Double A, for example?
Yeah. So I mean, ultimately, use our values, right? Mm-hmm. So we're gonna collaborate. We're gonna make sure we're using all of the information available to us, and not just our own personal insights, but look at historically what has been a good trajectory for a player of this age, of this caliber. Obviously heavily lean on the insights of our pro scouts, of our player development staff, our amateur scouts as well. In the case of someone like Vladdy, the international scouts. But ultimately, it's about determining where is the best environment for this player to focus on whatever the goal may be, the most important goal for that player.
Are you talking cultural environment or physical environment?
No,
or?
All of it.
Okay.
You know, so it could be weather, could be coaches, could be obviously the level of play, mm-hmm. And what players are in and around them. For, you know, players like Vladdy and Bo, you don't really focus on what, you know, the other players, the impact on the other players and what that will mean. You know, it really is. It's a risk analysis. Mm-hmm. So as you work through that decision, you want to use all the information available to you. And I mean, one of the ways that I've always thought about it, too, is you also don't want to put too much emphasis on Double A versus A ball, because ultimately there's the major leagues and the minor leagues. And so you really need to focus on just what is the best environment, where are the best coaches, where are the best resources for these individuals to focus on their goals.
Can a player force your hand sometimes, Ross? Like in terms of, you know, we've got to recalibrate here, you know, either, and that can be a positive or negative, I would think.
I think the best players always do. Yeah, the best players always do force our hand, and ultimately, you know, that's what you want. Those decisions are typically pretty easy when guys are performing at such levels that you do have to keep them challenged and you do have to keep them motivated. And, you know, each individual trajectory is different, but you know, the best players will always force our hands.
How different is the, you know, is it going to be dealing with these young players compared to the young players you have with Cleveland? I mean, I know it can't be a one-size-fits-all thing, I wouldn't think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every player is different, and we have unbelievable experiences that we're tapping into, and Ben Cherington and Eric Wedge and Gil Kim has really, really done a phenomenal job in his first 2.5 years as a farm director. One of the most interesting things that I think about our player development group is just the lack of ego. I mean, egos exist everywhere. It's just it's the nature of the beast of it in professional sport. But the way that Gil Kim has embraced tapping into Mark Shapiro's experiences, my experiences, Ben Cherington's experiences across all of the players that we've ever worked with through player development has been incredible, as opposed to thinking, okay, you know, I have to prove myself to demonstrate that I can make these decisions based on my relationships internally, versus thinking about how do I learn from all of these resources that I have to decide what is best for each individual, because it is absolutely different right. than, you know, anything that I have experienced. But each of us can always piece together insights and experiences that will help, you know, Ben and Gil make the best decision, and ultimately they will. They'll make the decision on where these guys play.
You know, I want to ask you about another guy, another young player, you know, Anthony Alford, who has been terrific this spring. Boy, he's great. A great kid, by the way. Jeff and I were just talking about this down the field in the last segment, Russ. But, you know, there's a guy who, you know, was a two-sport guy, so an athlete coming to baseball, but not just a ball player, had some injury issues that set him back, and then the last 2 years starts to really, really figure it out. Last year gets a little taste of the big leagues. If he doesn't get hurt, maybe he would have had more of a taste of the big leagues. This year, in this spring, he looks like a big league ball player. It's how much of, but you know, you haven't seen a lot of them, and you haven't seen a lot of them, and you haven't seen any of them, the high minors, really, or much of them. Is part of this just getting to a point where you believe your own eyes, where as an evaluator, where you say, you know, I see this kid out there right now. He looks physically like a major league player. He's a mature guy. You know, we know that he's, you know, succeeded as an athlete in another sport. He looks like, but I got to see a little more just so what I'm reading here kind of jibes with all of the other stuff and all of my other knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think the way you articulated it for a guy who doesn't have the same pedigree, his pedigree is very different, but he doesn't have the baseball pedigree, he doesn't have the baseball track record and years of just doing it and performing at an elite level, at a consistently high level. So the interesting thing about Anthony is that he is legitimately the easiest guy to talk about when you talk about improvement. And he, every single day, he's a little bit better. So any challenge that he's faced, whether it was the knee injury, whether it's the swing and miss, whether it's a swing adjustment, and working with Josh Donaldson to understand how, you know, he maximizes his power, working to be a little bit more pull-oriented this spring training, which has paid early dividends, is every time something's in front of him, he just checks it off. So That gives you the most confidence. And now where that ends up going is, man, he has so much talent and ability. It's one of the things I catch myself doing is you try not to talk about that potential too much because, yeah. It really is one of the most exciting players that we have because of the power, the speed, the purposeful practice that he just, every single challenge he faces, he seems to just take it off the list and say, done. I've covered that. I can now pull the ball. I've covered that. I am past this knee injury. Why you need me to have better angles and routes, they're better. You need to be more accurate with my throwing, it's better. So, but ultimately, you know, I think we're in a good position to be able to, have him force our hand a bit, as you stated earlier.
When you take a look at a player like Anthony Alford, and, you know, Stephen did articulate it well about where he is and his development and everything like that. And you take a look at Bo, you take a look at Vladdy Jr., maybe Lourdes Gurriel at some point. Do you allow yourself to look ahead a bit and kind of look at Anthony and go, he might be the guy that sort of helps set the tone of the clubhouse when everybody's, I mean, I know it's hard. You can't judge that, right? But, I mean, I've talked to him. Steven's talked to him. He comes across to me as the guy who might be the guy in the clubhouse that's going to try to make everybody feel welcome and maybe be the guy who doesn't run the clubhouse, but the guy who kind of marshals the guys around. Do you get that point, with him?
I think he'll do it much much like a Grady Sizemore did in that he will be
– football player, right?
Yeah, another – the hardest working and probably the least vocal. He is not someone to verbally, you know, let someone know in a loud way that they are out of line. He sets a standard for others. Now, when that matches performance, if his standards and his work ethic matches elite performance in the major leagues, then there's no stopping that type of influence. You don't need a voice. You have it. And everyone, for lack of a better way of saying it, just kind of gets in line.
Yeah.
Because when your best player is also your hardest worker, you have the potential to have one of the best professional environments around. When you have a few of those, then people are writing books about it and trying to study it and understand how that culture existed.
Ross, a slightly less blue sky story, because it's been a pretty blue sky camp. But, right. You know, we were just down on the field watching Troy Tulowitzki take BP. Our pal Kevin Barker chatted with him, and, you know, he said, Troy's, you know, he's frustrated. He's not feeling great yet. he's very limited in what he can do out here. And anybody who knows anything about Troy Tulowitzki, he's an incredibly work ethic driven guy. He, you know, he's very single minded in terms of baseball. And it's, you know, if you can't go out there and do it the way you have, it's got to be really hard. But I wonder, you know, we're what, 2.5 weeks away from the season now. What assumptions, if any, can you make about Troy Tulowitzki's role with this team this year?
Yeah, I mean, we just have to plan that he's going to be our major league shortstop and do everything we can to get him in the best position to do that and not focus too much on opening day. I think the balance at this point will be as he steps into his running activities, which, you know, if you watch him just pick up a ground ball, swing a bat, he looks like he could play in a major league game. And then the next test will be, you know, that double that he hits in the gap. So preparing him for that, preparing him from scoring from second, that's going to be the next test that hopefully sometime next week we'll have better insight into. And, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, he's our shortstop. He's a very good one. He's one of those leaders that we were talking about. He's done what we're hopeful that Anthony Alford will do. So his influence and impact is so powerful that instead of assuming, what we're going to do is focus on how we prepare him to be our major league shortstop. And, you know, there's always the potential of a setback, and I think we're better prepared for that with some of the depth that we have and some of the options that we have here. But you don't just replace a Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, and maybe assumption is the wrong word, Ross, but look, when do we get to a point where you say he's all of those things but he's not going to play in April? For instance.
Yeah, I think next week we'll have clarity on that when we start to push the envelope on running and see if he can go into a game and say, okay, score from second. Let's see. We're comfortable with you, you know, pushing that. So I think next week we'll have a lot more clarity, and then it will be balancing getting him the reps and the at-bats to make sure he can put his best foot forward and not just get 80% of Troy. So,
and then potentially you'd have to make a roster decision at some point too, wouldn't you?
You did 25-man?
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that could be the case, depending on, it, you know, if he's 4 or 5 days delayed, then, you know, that's different versus 10 to 15 days
sure.
Delayed.
What do you still need to see at this point in spring as general manager of this team, Ross? What you know, do you need to see how the bullpen shakes out? I mean, I think we've got a pretty good sense of the starting rotation.
Yeah.
You know. Knock on wood with health and everything, but good. Let's assume good health because it is such a great day here right now. Let's assume good health. What do you still need to see?
Yeah, I think the bullpen is the area. I mean, and then Troy's health, as
sure.
You mentioned, and how we offset that. So, you know, the bullpen there, we have a lot of good options. We had a very good bullpen last year, and a lot of those pieces are here. Minus Dominic Leone, and we've added some additional ones. So we feel like with the acquisition of O, and then the guys competing in Albuquerque, Axford, and Clippard for another spot, some of our younger relievers and Timmy Meza and Carlos Ramirez and Matt Dermody, we feel like we're going to have some pretty good options throughout. Not just, I think so much emphasis gets placed on who makes the team out of camp, and it's really... when it comes to your bullpen specifically, you want to start the year with the most depth as possible. So the way your bullpen looks on opening day could be entirely different on the third day of the season. As you saw last year, is how many moves occur because of having optionable relievers is such a valuable asset to an organization, because essentially it puts a lot less pressure in having that pitcher that can go 4 and 5 innings when your starter's knocked out in the second or third. So, you know, how we end up starting, I think will, you know, I'm playing my hand a little bit. You can see that it's going to be about maintaining as much depth as
right.
We possibly can.
Do both Mays and the other lefty, Brink, right? Mays and Dermody, they both have options left?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I know Axford's been one of the nice stories here so far. You know, guy was essentially out of baseball. And, you know, here he's... He's clean so far, right? I don't think he's given up an earned run. He's throwing high 90s. He's throwing strikes. You know, when you talked about, so, you know, him, Albuquerque, you know, Breslau's in camp. You just signed Clippard. Are those all guys? Essentially, we got 4 guys fighting for one spot. Is that kind of what it comes down to roster-wise?
I mean, I think it could be 2. It could be 3. So it just depends on, you know, how, again, it's going to be about ultimately keeping the most depth. So... if we start the year with 2 or 3 of those guys on our team, that would be a great outcome for us, because we're holding on to a lot of depth because of having guys with options. But at the same time, we've got to make sure that we can win on opening day, and we don't want someone in AAA that could have helped us win that opening day game. So, you know, that's the balance that Gibby will push me on, and I'll be thinking about the 10th day of the season, and he'll be thinking about the first, and that's why it works.
Can Danny Barnes be a guy that pitches multiple innings for you guys? You know, I don't know if necessarily Phil Leone's role specifically, but a guy can pitch maybe one and a third today, maybe one the next day, or can he be that guy, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think absolutely. And I think it's so rare. The long reliever is becoming less and less in today's game because of things we've just been talking about. But, you know, having it's very rare that a reliever pitches more than two innings. It does happen, of course, but it's rare. They're, you know, the bullpens, the way they're constructed, and having guys that can come up and down from AAA is so powerful. But Danny's been that guy. He's done it before. He did it last year, and I certainly feel that he could do it again.
How do you know, one of the things you've addressed, or is being addressed, you know, just through the evolution in some ways, Ross, of the starting pitching depth. You know, you ended up by necessity giving starts to some guys last year who you probably would have rather not given starts to them. You know, and it was one of the issues with the team, and it was about health and Aaron Sanchez. But you know, we look now to, you know, if Joe Biagini is your sixth guy essentially, or the opening day starter in Buffalo, if you got Ryan Borucki there, when you have to kind of drill down, because most teams use more than five guys over the course of a season, you know, how much more secure are you feeling about your options beyond the first five guys?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say how excited we are about Joe Biagini, just how he, first of all, acquiring him and him coming here on a Rule 5 incredible job by our pro scouting department, and Matt Anderson identifying the upside of him and the potential transition as a reliever, and now transitioning into a potential starter for us, to acquire a major league starting pitcher in the Rule 5 draft is game changing for us. And so we're going to do everything in our power to see that through, and the fact that the way he's fared thus far is extremely encouraging. Even last year, his starts against Baltimore, to, you know, it's rare for someone just to mow through eight innings and punch out, you know, I can't remember how many against Baltimore, but that potential, all of the traits of a starting pitcher are there. So that's been very encouraging for us. So we do feel better about it. You can never have enough. Ryan Borucki's been incredible. His year last year, his spring training, his work ethic, the teammate. We're excited about Thomas Pannone. We're really excited about Taylor Guerrieri. There's more options that aren't 34.
Yeah.
So, you know, having some youth and having guys in our system that we have control of, and with handedness and having left-handed, right-handed, and all of the attributes of major league starting pitchers. Now we need to continue to build on that. We need some great stories out of Sean Reed Foley and some of the guys that will be in Double A this year for us to be elite in that category. But we're one step closer for sure.
Is there an area of this team, because we talked a little bit about this in the past, about sort of the notion of value, which I admit I struggle with sometimes, especially on Twitter. Is there an area in this team where you can find some where you view surplus value as being a potential?
So individuals or just overall?
Overall, is there like an area where you think you may have that?
Yeah, our outfield. Yeah, okay. I mean, just our major league and AAA outfield is. I mean, we're going to have the potential of having Anthony Alford, Dalton Pompey, and Teoscar Hernandez running around in Buffalo every day. I don't think there's another organization that has that much talent in the outfield that we're going to – Dwight Smith is going to have to DH and, you know, be moved around throughout the outfield and have Roman Fields and Jonathan Davis. So our young outfield depth is at the high level is really encouraging. And so to add Randall Grichuk to that mix, another young, very athletic, controllable outfielder that we're excited about the upside of, and obviously the guys that have been here. So – Curtis Granderson's been really, really looked impressive, and didn't expect him not to, but it's just really encouraging that he came in as in ready and as motivated as he is right now, and the bat speed there, he's been such a remarkable influence on guys already. So, when you acquire a player, it's about winning games, but an added benefit, we knew that having Curtis Granderson around Anthony Alford, around Dalton Pompey, around Dwight Smith and Teoscar Hernandez and Randall Grichuk, I mean, that is a massive added benefit. Yeah.
Can I ask you just a little bit about Dalton Pompey, Russ? Because, you know, he's obviously, there's a lot of interest in him, hometown boy, essentially. And, not that long ago, left this place as the starting center fielder of the Toronto Blue Jays came north, didn't work out for him. He's had horrible luck with injuries. He had a bad concussion. We're talking a lot more about the Anthony Alfords of this world than we are about him now. Dalton hasn't hit much this spring. He's healthy, but he hasn't hit much. How does he fit in? Obviously, depth, and you talked about that. You're going to have a really interesting trio in Buffalo patrolling the outfield. But, you've got one more year of control of him, right?
This year.
Yeah, this year, right? Yeah. So, where is Dalton Pompey on the – it's been a circuitous route to get to this point. I feel for the kid.
So, hopefully we'd have a lot more years of control, but we have one more year with an option where he can go to AAA.
Yeah.
So, we'll find out if he's going to be a Toronto Blue Jay this year. Ultimately, it's been – he's such a remarkable person, that what he's had to overcome already, we're encouraged by his perseverance, his toughness, his grit, and his desire to be a Blue Jay is real and palpable. But the reality of it is he missed basically an entire year. So, I think getting his timing back, getting his rhythm back, and ultimately that turns into confidence. You can't just ask someone to have confidence. It comes with the reps and the consistency, and we're in a position where we can give him the chance to do that because of having another option, and really still see all of the attributes there to be that elite player, not just a contributing one, but the switch hit ability, the run ability. So I'm still third base. He's one of the better base stealers, really, you'll see in the minor leagues. He hasn't had a lot of opportunities to do it in the last couple of years, but he is his instincts and his confidence to steal bases is remarkable. So, we'll see. We're encouraged by just his mindset and where he is physically and hasn't turned into early spring training results, but it's going to be an interesting year for Dalton for sure.
Ross, we're going to let you run. Always appreciate your time. As I said, I know spring training, there's work to be done, and we really appreciate you joining us, as always.
All right. No, I love talking to you guys, and thanks for having me on.